step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18 plus.
You are listening to Devil We Know, a true crime podcast, which may contain adult themes, explicit language, and graphic depictions of violence. Portions of this show may be traumatic for those under 18. Listener discretion is advised.
Yeah, we were in the car.
Okay. And then it got heated in the car?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And, did it ever get physical in the car?
She pulled my hair.
Okay. How far from the venue were you, or was it still at the venue?
No, it was right before she got out of the car. We'd already started driving, and she was yelling at me. And she just yanked my head back. And I slammed on the brakes. And then I yelled at her, "What are you doing? Is in the car." And I reached back and hit her arm. Trying to make her let go of my hair.
Mm-hmm.
And when she finally let go of my hair, I started slowing the car down, which is when she started opening the door and saying, "I'm going to get out." Oh, well, first she had called her boyfriend.
You hit her in the arm how many times?
Oh, I don't know. I just reached back until she let go of my hair.
Okay.
Are you sure
that you were hitting her arm?
No.
You're just hitting something?
I was just reaching back and...
Okay.
It had to have been her arm because she was in like this.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm assuming it was her arm.
Okay.
Yeah, but she called her boyfriend first and wanted him to come get her. And that was before she pulled my hair.
In this episode of Devil We Know, Megan Cordy and her mother have an argument on their way home from a wedding. Did Megan leave the moving car on her own accord, or was something more malicious at play? Only her mother can say for sure. The vastness of the United States affords much variety in nature. The nation is filled with mountains, grasslands, marshes, and deserts. It's home to a number of topographies. Many states within are known for a specific type of land, some more iconic than others in this sense. Arizona, for example, is known for its deserts, just as Utah is known for its mountains, or Florida for its swamp. However, Oregon, the 33rd state to join the Union, is actually known for its variety, for its mountains, lush forests, waterway, and even active volcanoes that dote its landscape. Its varied plant life, animal life, and geological features are thanks in part to a separation of climates that's so vast that Oregon can all at once feature a Mediterranean climate in one corner and a subarctic one in the other. Never forgetting, of course, that Western Oregon is a region that, like Washington, is lush and green. In a word, oceanic. In short, Oregon is known for its wilderness in a way that most states aren't. It's revered for its beauty, for its diversity. But Oregon is also wilder than many states that came before it. It was one of the territories which housed many indigenous peoples early on, and still proved welcoming enough for both the European and European-American explorers of the 18th and 19th century, as well as the Spanish seafarers that came in from the Philippines as early as the 1500s. But it was, to many on all sides, a land worth charting, worth exploring. And it was Oregon that the mythical Western River was believed to reside. When these explorers found the Columbia River, the roar of it was so mighty that the people searching did not doubt it must flow all the way through the Great Plains toward the Mississippi, the fabled Northwest Passage. As famously pursued by Meriwether Lewis and William Clark when the first started from St. Louis in the early 19th century. As a result of this varied landscape and the vast cache of resources, it's no wonder that hydroelectric power, fishing, and agriculture by the truckload have become key staples of the economy here. Still, as much as Mother Nature gives, she might also take. Be it in the form of a volcanic event, an earthquake, or a flood, Oregon is no stranger to disaster. And even the smallest disasters, which we call accidents, things are never as clear-cut as they should be. It's things like what happened to Megan Cordy of Salem, Oregon, that really makes you wonder. What is it that makes a death natural? And what, if anything, can we do to save those that aren't? The day was humid, as expected by anyone driving only about 30 miles outside of Portland. And there was much to consider in the coming hours for Megan Cordy on August 18th, 2018. Megan, a 27-year-old from Salem, was preparing to attend a wedding with her 3-year-old daughter, along with her own mother, Jennifer Weathers. It was quite an ordeal to settle. After all, Megan had wanted to celebrate the marriage of their family friend, and figured a few drinks might be in order. But her car had a breathalyzer from a previous DUI, and by bringing her daughter, she was almost sure she'd have to drive home early. Unable to do so if the car wouldn't start due to the ignition lock she had on her vehicle if she had too much to drink. Jennifer, though, had this to say. She didn't want to be the one to drive because she knew they'd be forced to leave early. By forcing Megan to be the designated driver, they'd have to wait all the longer to leave the festivities, letting Jennifer party it up as long as she wanted. Eventually, though, it came down to practicality. What was best for her daughter? The two women, caught in their indecision, soon found themselves leaving for the event in Jennifer's Honda. The destination was a 40-minute drive or so from Megan's home. But the ride was likely uneventful, if a bit wordy. It was known to many that Megan's relationship with her mother was full of friction, but only at 4 or so in the afternoon, Megan seemed to be in high spirits. She'd walked into a nearby grocery store, Bob's Grand Island Grocery in Delhi, to be met with a compliment from Megan Spencer, who was working there that day. "That's really pretty," she had said about the floral pantsuit that Megan Cordy wore to the wedding. "Oh gosh, thank you," was the reply. And Megan Spencer, who said that Cordy had seemed fine, even remembers the interaction because of that particular outfit. As Ms. Spencer later said in an interview with KGW Channel 8 News, "She came in and she was in a floral pantsuit, and I remembered it because we do have weddings down here, but it's not overly common to see a bunch of people dressed up." It wasn't just the interaction in the grocery store, or even the beverages she grabbed for the road, that signified all was normal with Megan on her way to the wedding, though. Even Jennifer, in her testimony, makes it seem as though it was a great day, and that everything, in her words, was fine. For Megan, this at least stayed true through the reception. When people greeted her there, those that remember seeing her remember her drinking, but never seeming drunk. She seemed to be having a good time, in fact, enjoying herself responsibly. But this wasn't the case with the woman who had eventually agreed to take Megan and her daughter to the ceremony in the first place. Jennifer, who had been stewing over the assignment as designated driver, saw no reason why she should refrain from drinking anyway. And in fact, as though she had readily assumed she'd stay as long as possible, people described Jennifer as being sloppy drunk when she was at the reception, a far cry away from her daughter, who stayed lucid to all who saw her that night. While Jennifer assured later that she felt fine and only drank some wine and danced at the reception, the story was a stark contrast from others at the party. Three of whom who have distinctly acknowledged that Jennifer was too far gone to drive. Nonetheless, Megan was not going to be found behind the wheel after drinking so soon after her previous scrape with the law. That said, when the time came at around 10:15 p.m., it was clear that Megan's daughter wasn't going to make it much further into the night without fussing and fighting her way through it. An expected reality for a kid so young. Whether she was only tired or whether it may have been other things, such as hunger or overstimulation, Megan's daughter was ready to be home. And so, with much prying and coaxing, Megan pulled her mother away from the festivities and made it known that they were leaving. The thought of leaving so early, though this more rural area of Oregon was already pitch black by 10 at night, incensed Jennifer and made her lash out at Megan for the trouble it was causing her. She felt she had been cheated of her night out, but Megan would not relent because, again, the breathalyzer would keep her waiting far too long for her daughter to get home and into her own bed. The argument rose as they reached Jennifer's silver CRV, and Megan's daughter was fastened in the back, still awake and definitely fussy, while her mother and grandmother began to scream and yell at each other. It was around this time that Megan called her boyfriend to help by coming to pick her up. However, given the lateness of the call and the location of the wedding, her boyfriend refused, saying that he had to wake up early in the morning for work. Now at a stalemate, Jennifer noted that she slowed down to about 5 miles per hour when Megan reportedly left the car in a huff. She hadn't even taken her purse, her phone, or anything else. And after exiting the car in the darkness, Jennifer claimed that Megan was no longer anywhere to be seen. She even claimed to get out of the car to call out for her, but to no avail, mainly due to the area's purported lack of lighting. It was then that she continued her drive home to King City. With Megan's daughter now crying in the back seat, Jennifer was still allegedly heavily intoxicated and waited until the next day to take any sort of action. Apparently, she had assumed that Megan would find her own way back home, and based on her account, Megan was simply out of control. So perhaps, she thought, it's best that they parted ways. It wasn't until the next morning, still not hearing anything from Megan, that Jennifer decided to act. She claimed to discover the phone and purse along with Megan's shoes in the front seat of the car, and she returned to the area on and near Grand Island where the wedding had taken place. She drove for 2 hours for her, without asking the farm where the wedding was held or even asking the nearby homes and neighbors. She then made a call to the non-emergency dispatch number. August 19th, Jennifer was found saying that Megan hadn't shown up and that she had only about 10 minutes until she had to be at work, which wouldn't be possible if she was missing. Jennifer reported that she'd last seen Megan the night before, and in the call, you can hear the woman calmly state that she'd called all the hospitals and jails and had come up short.
Ian Holt Communications.
Hi, is this a number I call for a non-emergency?
This is the dispatch center non-emergency number. How can I help you?
I'm sorry. My daughter has been missing since last night, and I'm getting kind of worried because she's supposed to work in 10 minutes, and I haven't heard anything from her. We were at a wedding, and she was upset and got out of the car, and I haven't heard from her since, and I haven't been able to find her. I drove around for 2 hours this morning looking for where she got out of the car, and so I don't know if I should call 911 or if I have to wait a certain amount of time.
No, there's never a certain amount of time that you have to wait.
Okay.
Do you want to report her as missing?
Yeah, I think so.
Where was she missing from?
I've checked the hospitals and I've checked the jails, and she's not in either one of those. So the wedding was at Heiser Farms in Dayton, Oregon.
And what is her name?
Megan, M-E-I-G-H-A-N, Cordy, C-O-R-D-I-E.
You know what she was wearing?
She was wearing floral pantsuit. It was one piece, short sleeve, navy blue with flowers on it. And she doesn't have her phone. She didn't have her phone. She left it in my car. She didn't have her wallet. Everything was in my car.
Okay, we'll go ahead and have someone get in contact with you, okay?
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Bye. Bye.
Devil We Know is sponsored by Podcorn, the amazing marketplace designed to help podcasters of all sizes get sponsored the way they want.
I've been using Podcorn for a couple weeks now. It's real easy. You just log on, scroll through the many advertisers, send them a message why your podcast would be great to advertise on, and then you're off to the races. Creative control and transparency are the name of the game. Podcorn believes in leaving power in the hands of the creatives, and with their vast marketplace of sponsors with different needs, it's easy for any podcaster to find the deal that works best for them. Start with Podcorn now by following the link in our show notes and find a sponsor today. Just go to podcorn.com to get started.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
As with most disappearances, this report wasn't necessarily found to be odd or necessary by the investigators until they learned from Megan's workplace that she had yet to show up, and that even her friends had grown worried as a result. With the lack of answers to show for Megan's whereabouts, it was clear that a search party would be needed. And Megan's own father, the fire captain Tony Cordy in Clackamas, Oregon, assembled such a party with volunteers and firefighters alike to get started on their pursuit. In addition to Tony's rallied search efforts, there were missing posters placed all over the area that Jennifer had stated, the area surrounding Grand Island near the wedding venue. There were all sorts of wilderness being scoured in an effort to find Megan for 4 days, but even with the use of airborne infrared cameras used by Yamhill County's search and rescue team, there was no sign of the barefoot, abandoned woman that supposedly had left Jennifer's car. It was during this time, a time full of disappointment at the hands of family and friends alike, that Jennifer herself was being questioned about the circumstances surrounding her daughter's disappearance. The story she delivered, a story of verbal disagreement and of her daughter fleeing from the backseat of a Honda, made no sense to investigators as they pressed forward. They were finding inconsistencies and clues that create a clear signal of misdirection. For one thing, Detective Todd Steele found a clump of hair, Jennifer's hair, in the front seat of the CRV, making it abundantly clear that the so-called non-physical argument Jennifer had with Megan had been much more than that. It had been a full-on fight. This was made completely apparent by the fact that the roots were still attached to the hair clump. Detective Steele noted that, with the roots attached, this could not be the result of something banal like hairbrushing, but instead had to be the result of a physical altercation or actual hair yanking. Another problematic clue was that Jennifer claimed she found Megan's personal effects in the front seat, but she had claimed that when Megan left the car, she had left from the back seat. It was on this discovery of the physical altercation, though, that the investigators were perturbed and triggered. In fact, Detective Steele asked Jennifer after that if she was planning on telling the truth now. It was in response to this that Jennifer said, "I have not lied to you. I omitted a couple things." Steele then implored Jennifer to help him find her daughter. When they came to discuss the events of the ride home once more, Jennifer admitted to not knowing the area, stating that she had a guesstimation of where Megan left the vehicle. She claimed that Megan left while she was going around 5 miles per hour due to Megan screaming and demanding to get out. And Jennifer noted that the area was startlingly dark and that there was grass along the road. With all this information, police made their move in searching yet again in an attempt to get some clues as to where Megan might have gone. In the meantime, they asked Jennifer to take a polygraph. Only 3 days after Megan's abrupt vanishing act, Jennifer took her lie detector test with Salem PD, hoping that she would be one less suspect to keep track of. This hope was dashed quite quickly due to Jennifer's inability to comply in certain ordinances. For one thing, she was advised not to take any drugs or alcohol other than prescribed medications, so that her test results wouldn't be compromised from any outside psychological influences. As the polygraph simply takes note of bodily responses, the effects of the test could easily be influenced by introducing such substances to the body, and in turn, the results of the test would be useless. Jennifer, on the morning of her test, claimed she forgot about the Salem Police Department's advisement. Having taken a muscle relaxer the night before so that she could sleep, she was forced to take the test later in the day as a result, as investigators wanted their answers unsullied by the effect of such drugs. And so Jennifer sat in for her test a little after 1:30 p.m., and she was interrogated on the polygraph for about 2 hours, this time according for the violence that resulted in the hair being pulled out. Jennifer even claimed that she didn't remember all that occurred the night of the wedding. She started acting as though some of the events didn't make sense to her, and at the end of it all, the circumstances were thoroughly confusing still, as she still claimed Megan was in the back seat during the confrontation, despite all her belongings being found in the front seat. Her interrogation, as heard below, showcased a lack of concern and a lack of consistency throughout, including the way she explained away Megan's inability to keep track of time, or the fact that Megan's daughter was crying and was believed to say, "Just leave her, Nana," about her own mother after the altercation that occurred.
So, is this cursing back and forth at one another and really getting ugly like that? I mean, you're saying
that
she's...
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I mean, she called him, you know, "I want you to come get me, I want you to come get me," and he must have said no. And then...
Whose phone did she call him with?
Hers.
Okay.
And then...
And this is when she pulls your hair, not too long after that?
Yeah.
What predicated that?
Who knows? I have no idea.
Were you guys in the middle of yelling at one another when she pulls your hair?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Okay. I mean, usually there's something like that. Like, somebody says something if you were back to, like, you know, the silent treatment, like not talking to one another, then it would be, you know, it wouldn't seem like it would be.
Oh, right, like not talking, and all of a sudden she just reached up. Yeah. Oh, no, yeah, we were still arguing.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so then, you know, after he wouldn't come pick her up, and she pulls my hair.
Using derogatory terms towards one another? Is that, would that
no,
be
I don't
assessment?
Call Megan names, yeah.
Does she call you names?
Oh, of course. Okay. I mean, not of course, but yes, she does.
Okay.
Not like, yeah.
Okay.
No, I just kept saying, "What are you doing in the car? What are you doing?"
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, so then she pulls my hair, I slam on the brakes, trying to get her to let go of my hair. She finally lets go of my hair, starts slowing the car down. She's like, "I'm going to get out." And I'm like, "You're not getting out. The car, you're not getting out of the car." And I was almost to a stop, and she started opening the door, which is why I was slowing down. And I was almost to a stop, and she just opened it and jumped out. So then I stopped the car and got out and walked around it, closed her door that she had jumped out of, and I was looking for her. I couldn't see her anywhere. I'm calling her name, and she's not answering me. I can't leave the car because she's in it. So I'm just calling her name, get back in the car, and I can't see her anywhere. So I got back in the car and turned it around because I figured with the direction she jumped out, she'd be heading the opposite way. So I got back in the car and turned around and tried to find her with the headlights. I had the windows rolled down, and I'm just calling her name. She's just not answering, and I couldn't see anything.
How fast did you think you were going when she jumped out?
Oh, I mean, like, literally, I was almost to a stop.
Okay, like less than 5 miles per hour?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, because as soon as she started saying she was going to get out and started messing with the door handle, I started coming to a stop.
How long after she jumped out were you out of the car going around the back of it?
I mean, not that long. I mean, she jumped out. I stopped the car, put it in park, and got out.
So a matter of seconds.
Yeah. Yeah.
You didn't call anybody or anything?
No, I got right out of the car.
And you couldn't see her?
Mm-mm.
Did you hear anything when she jumped?
Mm-mm.
You didn't hear an ouch or anything like that?
No. No.
Okay. Then you went back to the car, turned around, headed back towards the farm?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What's the child doing?
I don't know. Crying, I can imagine.
Okay.
I was just so focused on trying to find Megan, and I just, I'm calling her name and looking out the window and trying to hear her. So I drove back and forth, I don't know, probably for about a half an hour, trying to find her. I called Burr at some point, but he didn't answer his phone. Oh my gosh.
So it's normal for Megan to flip out like this?
Not so much recently. I mean, back in the day when I first got divorced and got remarried, it was.
So how old has she been then?
She was 27 now. That was 2006.
Okay.
Jacob was 10, so she was probably 13, 14, maybe 14 when we actually finally were divorced. 15 maybe by the time Ty and I got married.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And, yeah, she was not happy about any of the situations.
Okay. So you drive back and forth for about half an hour.
Mm-hmm.
You never see her?
Mm-mm. Never saw her.
Did you hear her?
Mm-mm.
Okay.
No.
And then what'd you do?
And then she was crying, and I said, I gotta go home. I gotta take her home.
Okay. What was saying?
Just leave her, Nana.
Okay. All right.
And then we went home.
You went back to King City?
Mm-hmm.
Did you try and call her?
Try and call Megan?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-mm. No, I did not.
Why not?
I don't know. It didn't even occur to me to try and call her.
Okay.
I was more worried about and getting home. At that point, Megan wasn't my focus. Was. So I just drove home and I took her upstairs and put her to bed.
Had Megan done this kind of stuff in the past?
What kind of stuff?
Jump out of your car.
She'd never actually done it, but yeah, she's threatened to before.
Okay.
Back in the day.
Okay. So, what time do you think you got home?
I don't know, probably almost midnight by the time I got home.
Okay.
Around midnight. And I woke up at about 5:30.
Went right to bed?
Mm-hmm.
Go right to bed?
Yeah, she was conked by the time we got home.
She was already asleep in the car. Okay.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And, any more drinking or anything that night for you?
No, definitely.
Muscle relaxers, anything?
No.
Okay.
No. No, I was so tired already. I was exhausted. I didn't take my makeup off or anything. I never do that. I didn't take my contacts out.
Okay.
I just got in bed with because she was asleep. And I just crawled in with her and cuddled her.
Okay. Did that surprise you that Megan was acting the way she was acting in front of her daughter?
In front of her daughter, yeah. And that she wouldn't stop.
Okay.
It definitely surprised me. I mean, she hadn't done anything like that before.
No?
No. No. I mean, not in front of...
Okay.
No.
She's acted out of control in the past, but not in front of...
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, and... Yeah.
So,
that's why I ended up thinking she'd had more to drink than we thought.
Okay.
You know, because it was just so out of control.
Jennifer, all through her interrogation, was exhibiting incredibly erratic and inconsistent psychological responses. And this wasn't just an observation made visually. There were indications on the machine's test result that spoke to the same inconsistencies. Specifically, there were two questions that stood out as inconclusive on the test, along with many others. The first was this: are you lying about your daughter getting out of the car on her own? The second, followed up right after this, was: are you lying about any part of your daughter's disappearance? To both of these in succession, Jennifer had answered no. And after this, it was found that the test in itself was inconclusive. When Detective Thomas Johnson found these results and shared them with Jennifer, he suggested she come back the next day. Jennifer agreed to this until later that night, when she canceled with the police altogether. The problem was, Jennifer never made an effort to reschedule her polygraph test, and so the police were at a loss with their inconclusive results. However, only 2 days after Jennifer's interrogation, more answers came up, grave answers at that. On the morning of the 23rd, three joggers came across a woman down an embankment on the Dayton Interchange on Highway 18. The call the joggers made was all the more disconcerting, though, because although the woman matched the description of Megan on the night of her disappearance, one specific difference was noted. This woman was found dead. That scene was visited soon enough by a forensic team and a medical examiner, and the McMinnville Fire Department was deployed to document the scene with pictures. The medical examiner didn't take long to find what had killed Megan. Specifically, she died as a result of blunt force trauma called aortic separation, something that causes immediate death. Two broken vertebrae, in addition to this, made it clear that Megan's death was some kind of collision. But the kind of trauma that Megan went through to die this way wouldn't be possible by being run over. In fact, detectives ruled that out, instead noting that the cause of death was more consistent with the collision of a stable blunt object after leaving a high-speed vehicle. The whole scene reeked of misdirection once more, because in Jennifer's interview, she explicitly confirms that she was driving under 5 miles per hour. These injuries discovered on her daughter's body, though, made it clear that that wasn't the case. What's more, the location where Megan's body was found was more than 9 miles away from where Jennifer had said Megan had jumped out, meaning that the search parties from before had been misdirected this whole time. Brad Berry, the county's district attorney, stated it best: things just did not make sense. It wasn't until the story became a complete whole with the help of the remaining witnesses, Megan's daughter, that police began to piece together Jennifer's broken narrative. A child specialist arranged a meeting with Megan's daughter, whose own recollection of events was quite colorful. There was the yelling, the hitting, the hair pulling, and then her mom, Megan, left the front seat of the car, where she'd been sitting, and got out. She returned to the car, this time in the back seat, next to her daughter. This meant that Megan left the car twice, the first time leaving the front seat where her belongings had been, and secondly leaving the car during another section of the journey. But why and how did it happen? Again, Jennifer affirmed that when Megan left, an occurrence of which she only mentioned one, she had been driving nice and slow, almost to a stop. And yet, when a family member drove Megan's daughter at another time, Megan's daughter had been heard saying, "This is how fast the car was going when her mother left the car that fateful night." How fast was the car going? Megan's daughter made this remark just as the family member's car had gotten onto the freeway. Once again, clarity rang true from the mouth of Babes, and Jennifer's story was looking less and less believable by the minute. Megan's daughter, with all her young mind could record and offer to answer the questions that had been surrounding her mother's death, had provided what Jennifer could not. Together with these disparate accounts and with the discovered body, the police could finally ascertain what happened, to some degree, to Megan that fateful night. After the second altercation, the car took a curve on a road with a guardrail, and when Megan left the car, willingly or not, she was killed on impact with one of the guardrail support posts, rolling out of sight down the embankment where she was later found. Based on her position in the back seat, the investigators also ruled it unlikely that Jennifer pushed Megan out of the car, instead of seeing it as, in all likelihood, an accident of grave consequence. Still, it's not as if Jennifer was found completely blameless in the event that led to Megan's untimely demise. It was firstly considered that Jennifer was behaving recklessly, and she was driving heavily intoxicated, something which meant she needed to not only attend specific high-risk driving courses and pay a hefty fine, it also meant that she was likely to receive a jail sentence. She was also charged with reckless endangerment, especially given that her DUI, driving under the influence of intoxicants, was not only endangering her daughter, but her granddaughter as well. She tried to apply for the DUI diversion program, which excuses a single DUI charge in a 15-year span if a driver completes the program. It would have saved Jennifer any jail time or fines in the process, but given the consequences of her heinous acts behind the wheel, the judge dismissed the application altogether. Finally, in February of 2019, Jennifer was offered a plea deal to plead guilty and receive only 5 days in jail. In conjunction with this 120-hour sentence, she would have a 36-month probation period, a fine of $1,000, and a 12-month suspension of her license, among other consequences. One of the most significant that she noted, though, was that due to her probation, she won't be allowed to contact her granddaughter. Jennifer did as she was told, and later in mid-February was released from jail, but Jennifer Weathers didn't leave a free woman. It was clear that there were specific burdens that she now couldn't outrun, but strangely enough, one of the biggest turned out to be her name. She was making headlines left and right in her home county, and only one day after leaving jail, she wrote and signed a petition to a judge and changed her legal name from Jennifer C. Weathers to Jennifer C. Yeager. The Oregonian newspaper reached out to Jennifer to find out more, but Jennifer refused to comment. However, it was mentioned that Yeager was a name that Jennifer had used in her earlier life, so apparently, aliases and such types of misdirection aren't new for her to begin with. Jennifer had lost her daughter to her own actions, more or less, as the fight had been allegedly Jennifer's to begin with, and yet what resulted was more of a slap on the wrist for the drunk driving that was endangering herself and others. However, Jennifer clearly seemed affected, as her choice to respond was to change her own identity and escape the reality that followed Jennifer Weathers in that region now. As if the way the state wanted to handle it wasn't enough, a heartbroken father, Tony Cordy, wanted answers and a little restitution as well, something to the tune of $500,000 for extreme emotional distress and loss of companionship. It was clear, too, that Jennifer had misled authorities during the investigation. So Tony, being one of those on the search and rescue teams, called attention to this in the lawsuit that he filed against her in October of 2019. Because of her reckless driving, her drunkenness, and her lack of wherewithal that night, he lost his only daughter, and he felt that she should be held responsible. There was another party, though, that this grieving father felt should be held accountable for what happened to Megan that night. Heisen Farms, the venue for the wedding, had reportedly been serving Jennifer all night, continuously, to the point where she and others put it later, became sloppy drunk. It was a horrific sight, enough so that multiple witnesses were positive that she was not fit to drive. And yet, she drove out that night, transporting her crying, fussy granddaughter and desperate daughter alike, to get back home after becoming more than a little intoxicated. This impairment of judgment, this lack of care or compassion for Megan's well-being, can be directed at least partially to the overseeing practice at Heisen Farms that night, according to Tony's other lawsuit. Still, as Tony tried to pry nearly $1 million from Heisen Farms, who had no immediate comment to the lawsuit, the question of Jennifer remained. As the first lawsuit processed, there was a defense motion to throw out the lawsuit, one that remained uncontested, likely due to Tony's other pursuits. When Tony failed to respond to the defense motion, the judge had no choice but to dismiss the suit altogether. Though, this was done without prejudice, which means that if Tony saw fit, he could file another lawsuit claim to the same degree without interference. Whether he continues down that road, continues to pry at Jennifer for what she'd allegedly done to lose their child, will only be seen as time passes. Megan's daughter does not live with her grandmother currently, as Jennifer is barred from seeing her and being in contact with her until February of 2022. Still, it's an odd situation. On the one hand, Jennifer claims she helped to raise this child, meaning that Megan's daughter is now without her mother and without the grandmother that apparently played such an active role in her life. But that's the thing about letting nature take over, whether it's the obstacles found in the wilderness or the dangers of our human natures. There's something about natural occurrences, disaster and death, that unsettles even the most stable systems. A little alcohol here, a turn of the wheel, and a placement of a person on the side of a road at too fast a speed can turn into something much more than a series of events. It can turn into consequence. But more dangerous than all of that, if you can believe it, is the fact that some people don't see what they do. They don't see the danger they bring to others. They don't acknowledge their behaviors. And in lying to themselves, they lie to their loved ones. It's in this kind of action that one might even find the lie becoming an excuse to bring disaster around again, if you let them. Thank you so much for listening to Devil We Know. As always, I'm your host, Aaron. To listen to Devil We Know episodes without ads and earlier than the public release, go to patreon.com/devilweknowpodcast to start supporting us. It only costs $1 and gets you early access. This episode was researched by Chantel York and written and researched by David Wayne Young. Editing was done by Chase Gray. Remember, Devil We Know is back to bringing you regular content, so stay tuned and tell a friend that loves true crime. As always, stay safe out there and keep your head on a swivel.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.